Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Hi, this is Pat Sloan with American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. We are working on getting my first guest here on the show, so let me just tell you a little bit about her before we get her on the show here. She's Kathy Cardiff of the Cottage of Cardiff Farm, and she works a lot with wool and primitive style and applique. So we are going to talk some wool today because she has so many fantastic tips about how to work with wool. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. You're so sweet. Thanks for asking me.
You know, we chatted when I saw you at the show a couple months ago, and I just, you know, whenever I go in your booth, I want to touch every little detail. Your work is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think the fuzziness of the wool just makes it so inviting. It makes it look soft.
I know. Wool is very addictive. You know, once you start playing and touching wool, as long as you're not allergic, it's fantastic. And I want you to tell me, when did you first, you also work in cotton, so you're not exclusively a wool worker, but when did you first start working with wool?
I first started working with wool. I was actually teaching beginning quilt classes. And the store that I taught at had started some classes with working with wool. And so I started taking one of those classes and just immediately fell in love.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so friendly to work with.
You know, I think I find so many people say that. I've done a lot with wool, and it's just, it's forgiving. You can't go wrong, can you? It's like you can't even do it wrong. It's so easy.
There's a fix for everything.
So tell me a little bit about how you adhere, because most people are appliquing wool,
right,
to cotton or whatever. But what is your favorite method of adhering wool applique shapes to the background so that you can work with it?
My favorite way is to use a lightweight fusible.
Okay.
What I started using pins at first, and I wasn't using a fusible at all. I was using freezer paper to cut my templates and then cutting the wool out from that, but I started losing pins all over the house.
Oh,
because the pins just slide right out of wool, much easier than they do the cotton.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband looked at me one day after he had come across one, and he said, "Is there another way that you can do this?" And so I started using a lightweight fusible, and I just fell in love with that, because even though I like the primitive side of the wool and the texture and adding all that texture to my pieces, I'm still a little obsessive about my edges.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a tendency to really wrestle my pieces while I'm sewing them. So if I use the fusible, it kind of keeps my edges together a little better and my applique in place.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that.
Which fusible do you like to work with?
There's two that I like to work with. I like to use soft fuse.
Mm-hmm.
I have found that when you're using the soft fuse, if you steam it, it doesn't say it on the directions, but if you steam it, it holds the wool together quite nicely.
Yeah.
And I also like the other steam, a seam too light.
Mm-hmm.
That's a favorite. That one, I find that the more you steam it, the longer you steam it, the softer it is to sew through.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that's one of the things with the fusible. Then you have to needle it by hand if you're working by hand. And so some of them can be a little tougher to push the needle through.
Right. And if you don't use enough steam on those soft fusibles when you're doing the wool, they have mm-hmm. a tendency to get gummy on your needles.
Oh.
So if that's happening, just go back and re-steam those.
Now, are you using a pressing cloth over top of the wool? I mean, how are you layering it?
I always use a pressing cloth. And I actually, when I'm putting the fusible onto my wool, I like to put one underneath also, because if there's just mm-hmm. the littlest piece of that hanging over the edge of your wool, mm-hmm. it gets mm-hmm. on your ironing board.
Yeah.
So I find that it's best to put one on both sides. But wool is so sensitive. Even though it has all that nice texture and fuzz and everything, mm-hmm. it's much more easily scorched than cotton. Mm-hmm. So I always recommend to my students that they always use a pressing cloth, because once that, and you always keep your iron moving. Never let your iron sit in one place too long, because that can, it just scorches, and then there's no repair for that.
You
can't wash it out. It's burned
trash
in there. So you can always add some little berries or something
right.
in there. But like I said, there's a fix for everything.
Are you using just a plain piece of cotton or muslin, or are you buying something special as a pressing cloth?
I actually just have a stack of the cotton flour sack towels.
Oh, okay.
That I can buy at, you know, one of the stores. You can get like a pack of 6 or 12, mm-hmm. and I rip them in half, and I just use those constantly.
Okay. And do you wash them to make them soft? I mean, when they come new, some of them aren't quite as soft as others. Does it matter?
If they feel like they have a sizing in them when I buy mm-hmm. them, I mm-hmm. do wash them.
Okay, yeah.
Just because I want to get all that out of there.
Right. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have your method of, did you ever use staples? Have you ever tried that, to staple your applique?
I have not, but I've heard of it.
Yeah, it works. It really, it really, really works. The problem is when you have a larger piece, you know, like a big table runner or something, if it's too wide, you can't get all of that wool into the throat of your stapler.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because most of my mats start in the center and go out. And I've always wondered, like, how do you get that staple way in there?
Right. Well, you have to use a school, one from the school.
Oh.
They have these long ones.
Uh-huh. That's the trick. Okay, I
there
know
you
some
go.
Teachers.
So what is your favorite stitch to adhere when you're doing hand work, your applique?
I would say that almost all the time, probably 90% of the time, I just like a basic whip stitch.
Okay.
When I'm teaching in my class, I call it a primitive whip stitch so that my mm-hmm. students aren't afraid to do it. That
mm-hmm,
way...
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be perfect. Anytime you add the word primitive to anything, it kind of eases it up. then if I want a piece to stand out, I'll use a blanket stitch so that mm-hmm. it has that extra little edge. But then I also do some embellishing on some of my mats, and I'll use a back stitch or stem stitch, lazy daisies, French knots. And I encourage my students to... you know, get those little booklets out or watch tutorials and put all the embellishment on there that you'd like.
And you have some gorgeous booklets. You have several project booklets. Is this information in most of those?
There is. All my tips and that kind of thing are in the front of the books. There are two books that I put out in consecutive years, and they're small projects and pincushions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I do give all my tips, and I give my favorite things that I like to use, like the fusible mm-hmm. and that kind of information. And then I have a page that shows diagrams on the stitches.
Oh, good.
So I try and give all that information, and even what colors red I used on it
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
all kinds of info so that they can just take that book and run with it.
Yeah, they're excellent books, and people can get them from your website, The Cottage at Cardiff Farms.
Correct.
So Kathy, what thread, I mean, do you use one thread exclusively, or do you mess around with a whole bunch of different types of thread?
I have tried a lot of different threads, but I would mm-hmm. say that my very favorite thread is the Baldani variegated size 12.
Okay.
That's my absolute favorite. I do use the eighths also, which are a little heavier, and I like to use those on the blanket stitch when I go around the edge of a piece or if I want something to really show up, like a tree trunk or that kind of thing. But I would say that the 12 and the Valdani variegateds are my absolute favorite. I find that variegated threads just add a whole nother dimension to your piece.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, people, you know, if they haven't tried them, you have to get out and try different threads because they all have, you know, wonderful properties that make things sparkle, right?
Oh, they do. And yeah. I have friends that, and it seems like we all have a different favorite. Some like wool, some like the shinier, you know, it just, and it does, and it kind of, that's a way for you to put your little spin on those designs. It shows through with what you decide to stitch down.
So I want to wrap this up, but I want you to tell me your favorite thing about your business recently is you work with your daughter.
I do.
That's
do.
So
I'm
cool.
Very lucky to work with my daughter. She is extremely talented in more ways than one. And she started out working just by giving me little hints on organization, like, get in line, Mom, you know, you need this many designs done by this date. And finally we started just formally working together. And she actually does all the photography and graphic arts and all my website and blogs and all the technical, and still keeps me in line, still says, Mom, you know, do you have this design done? And and she has a long-arm quilting business, so I'm not sure how she does it all, but we enjoy working together so much.
And do you live near each other?
She lives about maybe 12, 13 minutes from me.
Oh, so okay.
Pretty
that's
close.
Great.
We're both out in the country, and we really enjoy it. She has two little ones, so she comes over here or I go over there, and one of us works and one of us plays, and it works out.
And just real quickly, you teach in your local area. Where could people find that info?
I do, right. I teach at the Country Loft. It's in La Mesa, California.
Good.
And it's a beautiful little store full of antiques and gifts and quilting and wool. And then in March, I'm actually going to start teaching at a new store. Primitive Gatherings is opening a store in Marietta, California. And in March, I'll start teaching there.
Wonderful. That's Lisa's store.
Lisa, yes, it is. Yes.
Yes. Fantastic. Well, Kathy, this has been so much fun. Thank you for sharing all that fantastic wool knowledge.
Oh, thank you for calling, Pat. It's been so much fun. Thanks for inviting me.
We'll be right back after the break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Reaching out from the heartland of the United States with quality programming, this is TokiNet Radio.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. We are sponsored by Moda Fabrics, and they have some fantastic things out on the internet that you can check out at the Moda Bake Shop. They have lots of free patterns with their pre-cuts, and then also you can go on over to their website and Moda Fabrics, and you can download all the little swatches so that if you use EQ or something like that, you can do all the little swatches and put them in your process and in your designing. So I have two more guests today. We're sort of switching around, trying to get hold of them. It's one of those days here at the podcast. So I am going to be talking, hopefully, with Meg Hockey of Crabapple Hill. And also we're going to be talking about memorabilia quilts with Trish Bowman. And I'm trying to get hold of one or the other. Do we have Meg or we have Trish? Hi, Trish. How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I am good. We had a little switch up on who we could get hold of, so I'm glad you were available.
Well, no problem. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, Trish has a whole enormous amount of information on memory quilts. And I am fascinated with memory quilts. Out on my Facebook group, Trish, we have so many people making them that I thought it would be fantastic for us to do some really detailed talk about the process and what making memory quilts is kind of all about, because you are really an expert.
I really enjoy it. It's my passion. It's what I really enjoy doing.
What, did you start out quilt making with memory quilts, or did you do something else first?
I first started out with just making regular quilts. And then about 30 years ago, I decided I had a bunch of T-shirts from when my husband was at West Point, a cadet at the academy. Mm-hmm. And I needed some quilts to take to the Army-Navy game. So mm-hmm. I made my first T-shirt quilt out of all the T-shirts from there. And then I also at the same time made my first clothes quilt out of his uniforms and fabric. And so I really kind of got into both areas at the same time.
Oh, that's, that's like the whole spectrum there. You just jumped in with everything.
Yeah, I really didn't. I look at them now and I'm thinking, gosh, I would do things a little differently now than I did then. But they, you know, I still use them. They're still hanging in there.
So let's talk a bit about how, what a memory quilt is, I guess, because I see people who will make them for someone who's passed away. You know, obviously they're taking clothes, and that's sort of like, I think, where some people think that's the only kind of memory quilt there is. But then there's this whole other, the T-shirt quilts are, you know, when kids graduate from school, your husband's uniforms. Tell me a little bit about what kinds of memory quilts people make.
Well, I think memory quilts really can be anything because it's just the memory it evokes. So you don't really have to have worn something to have it be a memory. I've made quilts for people out of T-shirts that they've worn to death, soccer shirts, lacrosse. I've had some shirts that have been so well loved, they're like paper thin, and they've wanted them in the quilt. And then I have clothes that that run the gamut from a bathrobe to a Versace suit. Yeah. I did a couple of those recently, and my girlfriend and I, who helps me, we had a really hard time cutting it apart because it was, it's like I really don't want to cut a Versace tux apart, but that was part of the memory, and they wanted those. So, but then I've also made quilts that are a memory quilt because of what I've done to them. I have a Halloween quilt that I modified, and it has different costumes on it. And I changed it up and put costumes that my children wore. Mm-hmm. I added an M&M, and I added a ice cream sandwich.
Oh, cute.
And things like that. And so it really didn't start out as a memory quilt. It started out as just a Halloween quilt. But it ended up a memory quilt because it has, costumes that my children wore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you really can do just about anything. You just have to be careful you know, for different things, like if you're going to use awards and things like that, they don't necessarily hold up under washing. So those would be wall hangings. And so you just have to think about how you want to use them before you make the quilt.
So are you finding that a lot? That's a really good point. You know, how are they going to be used? Because what is your experience been? Are more people washing them and like really using them, or are more of them a keepsake where they really don't intend to have much use?
I think it's a combination. My big thing is that I want them to be used when I make quilts for people. So I tell them, it's meant to be loved. You need to be respectful of it because they are, old fabrics or old shirts. But, so you wouldn't drag them on the ground or whatever. But, they're meant to be snuggled under, and I try and keep them really soft so that you want to snuggle under them. They're not mm-hmm. stiff. And I usually just say, if something happens to it, either send it back or, we can fix it. You want it to be used. So most of them, I think, are used.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to, instead of washing it a lot, air it out. You know what I mean? Instead of having to put it in the wash, let it air out instead of washing it, unless you really have to. That kind of thing. But I think for the most part, they are really used. I get a lot of people that want them made for, college students going off to school or just graduating. And, so I try and make them in the area that they'll be able to use them. I had one mom that asked me to make a quilt, but her son was kind of a modern guy. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, he's never going to want to have this out in his living room. But I found this backing material that was black that looked almost like a suit fabric. It was cotton, but it looked very contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we used for the back. So he could fold it in such a way that he could put it on his, chair or on his couch, and it would blend in with his house.
Ah.
Do you know what I mean? So
yes.
He could still use it, and when he wasn't use it, he could kind of hide it and just have the back show.
Tricky. That's tricky.
Yeah. So you just kind of work with the client and find out what they want and what memory they're trying to evoke. And like what I was saying about the not necessarily wearing T-shirts, mm-hmm. being in Orlando, we did a lot of, the space program stuff.
Oh.
And so when they stopped the shuttle, I bought some T-shirts that commemorated mm-hmm. the shuttle program for our mm-hmm. family. And so we never wore those shirts, but they bring back a lot of memories for us.
Yeah.
So I made quilts for the family out of those shirts. So you don't have to necessarily have worn it, just it's the memory that it brings back.
Yeah, and that's a really, really good point, because I think a lot of people, there are really great graphics on a T-shirt, but they may not be what you personally want to wear, or like on the space shuttle, those commemorative ones, you don't really want to mess them up. So you could buy those on your travels and keep them.
Right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, the woman that does my hair, her and her daughter went on a trip, and I suggested that at every place they went over the summer to look and buy some shirts, mm-hmm. and that, they didn't have to be the size she would wear, just what, commemorated where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came back, she gave them to me, and I made a quilt for her daughter that was a commemorative of their summer together traveling across the Midwest.
Huh.
And the daughter was surprised because she didn't know her mom had been collecting the shirts as she went along.
Right, right.
So.
Oh, that is really neat. That is, I like that. I like that. What we're going to do, Trish, is walk through, we have time. So we're going to walk through the process. And you have, so that people know, you have a book called Easy Memorabilia Quilts, which is, a fantastic piece if you really want to get into doing this. Fantastic book, because Trish tells you all kinds of things in here that we're talking about. So let's talk first, before we get to the break, let's just talk about pieces of clothing that have been worn and how do you prepare them, because they may have stains, they may have, not been cleaned as well as they could have. What's the process?
Well, depending on how stained they are, you can, you know, wash them, dry clean them, or whatever. Some things you're never going to get all the stains out. I always say that, you know, my kids' soccer jerseys will forever have Virginia Clay in them, and that's okay. That's part of the memory. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, using the shirts. Mm-hmm. But you just, you know, you clean them as much as possible. And then for as far as clothes, you just, you start ripping them apart just to make them flat fabric.
Right.
So you're not going to get the big pieces usually that you can strip piece like you could with fabric, regular fabric. But, you know, you can get plenty of smaller pieces that you can use to make just about any kind of block you want. But they, like I said, it wouldn't be strip piecing. You would have to cut each piece individually.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
if it has any kind of stabilizer in it, you would pull the stabilizer out because most of those stabilizers are meant to make the fabric really stiff.
Mm-hmm.
And for quilts, you don't want it stiff. You want it soft. So
that's,
I usually will take out as much of the stabilizer as I can,
mm-hmm.
and then I re-stabilize it with I use a fusible knit, a tricot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very soft. It keeps it the fabric soft, so therefore the quilt will be nice and soft. And there's a lot of products out there that work, you know, well. Some people use French fuse and things like that. But the secret is to just test it because some people will buy a stabilizer that it seems really soft in the store, but then when they get it home and they use it, it's stiff, and it's because the glue has been activated. And the some of the glues turn hard.
Okay.
So I always tell people, no matter what you're using, if unless you've used it before and know, always test it on a piece of the fabric first.
Okay.
Because I've had people that have ruined several things because, you know, oh, it's nice and soft.
Right.
But as soon as they activate the glue, it's stiff as a board.
Stiff as a board. Okay. So now, Trish, hold that thought. Hold that thought because we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And then when we come back to the break, I want to go back. I want to take a step back again into talking about the taking the clothes apart. So we'll be right back, folks.
Okay.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Babylock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm talking memory quilts, deep, deep details with Trish Bowman, who is the author of Easy Memorabilia Quilts. So, Trish, I want to go back and talk a little bit about that taking the clothing apart again. Because, you know, years ago I used to buy a lot of wool, like we would talk wool with Kathy first. But I used to buy wool skirts and things like that. And there was interfacing and clothing I had no idea would be there. Do you find that, like, clothing has interfacing sometimes that you could leave on, or must you always sort of remove that?
I usually will try and remove as much of the stiffer stabilizer as I can, or interfacing. Some of the interfacings, like on the wool and stuff, is that lightweight fusible that really doesn't add stiffness. Mm-hmm. So I don't worry about that as much. Like the suits I took apart for this quilt for this man, there mm-hmm. were a lot of suits and tuxes. And once we got the heavy stabilizer out, there still was some of the softer, and mm-hmm. that we just left in.
Okay. All right. Because, you know, I found that, you know, there were places where I'm like, really? There's, you know, a stabilizer here? You know, why is it like
yeah,
all the way
exactly.
down the arm of the jacket? You know, it's really.
Right.
Oh, well, that's
yeah,
good
and I
to
just,
know.
A lot of the times I'll just leave that in and mm-hmm. Because it's still soft.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's some areas that you might have, like around the pockets and stuff, that mm-hmm. they have the really stiff stuff that mm-hmm. you can't even necessarily get out.
Right.
And I would just cut around that and not use it.
Yeah.
Again, it's up to you, but if you're using it to snuggle under, I really mm-hmm. try and stay away from anything that is stiff. You want to stay as soft as possible.
And if it were a piece, like, let's say you're doing like a wall hanging and you wanted to be sure you kept a pocket, you know, because you wanted that Versace thing to show, you know, it's like,
right.
then it's not going to matter so much, right?
Right, exactly. Because you're not going to be snuggling under it. So it doesn't matter if it's soft or not.
Right. All right. So let's now talk about, you know, we have things, we've started taking them apart. We've got them clean. The t-shirts to me, you know, I personally have not made a t-shirt quilt. And so I've not gone through the process myself, but the t-shirts themselves scare me sometimes. I'm like, they're going to stretch. You know, how do I make them so that, you know, they don't, you know, because I've taken a hem off, Trish, and tried
right.
to re-hem a t-shirt. And like the whole t-shirt like bows out at the bottom.
Right.
On some, you know, t-shirts. And I'm like, what is the process you recommend to working with the t-shirts?
I'm a firm believer in stabilizing, and there are several schools of thought. Some people firmly believe that they don't have to stabilize a t-shirt,
mm-hmm.
that they can just sew a bunch of t-shirts together and that works for them. I have not found that as easy. I think a lot of people, like you said, are really afraid of doing it and have stretched things out to where it doesn't go together as easily.
Mm-hmm.
So my process, what I usually do is two cuts. I cut my shirt apart to either the front or the back, sometimes both. You know, you use both designs. And my first cut is an inch bigger, you know, than what the final block is going to be. So let's say the design is, you know, a 15.5 inch or 15 inch design. My first cut would be a 16.5, and that gives me room to put my stabilizer on, and it'll stretch a little bit when you put the stabilizer on, and then you would cut it again, and you would make it your 15.5 inch, so you would have a 15-inch block. So there's two cuts involved, and one of the mistakes I think a lot of people make is they try and save time. And they'll cut their shirt apart, and they'll make only one cut, and they'll put their stabilizer on, and then they try and put it in the quilt.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that no matter how good you are, your block is not going to be square anymore.
Oh,
you know, as you're putting the stabilizer on, you're going to warp the block.
Right,
and,
right.
So the biggest frustration I have people tell me about is that the blocks are never square, they're never the same size, so
mm-hmm.
it was hard to put them together. So that's why I, you know, my system is two cuts. One is an inch bigger than what the final cut's going to be. So it doesn't matter what size you want to make your blocks. If you want to make them a 12-inch, then you would cut a 13.5-inch first cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I also cut my stabilizer the same size as my first cut. So that way, you're not wasting stabilizer. Some people will cut apart the shirt, you know, so you have the front or the back, and they cover that whole thing with stabilizer.
Mm.
And then they take their ruler and make the cut, and it's like, well, yeah, it's square, but you've just totally wasted a lot of stabilizer.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Because you're throwing
yeah.
out the whole rest of that.
Right.
So this way you're not wasting any stabilizer.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, how wide does that stabilizer come? Does it vary?
What I use, the Trico, is 20 inches.
Okay.
And so it's plenty wide enough for any of the sizes that you would want, pretty much. I mean, unless you have a really big, oversized one. But, but I don't think I've ever had a problem with it. But and it also, it pieces. So the stabilizer I use, it's the fusible knit, it is directional. But as long as you're using it in the right direction, you can piece it. So there's no wasting of any of the stabilizer. You can use every piece.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. Yay! Yeah. Being frugal with everything.
You don't want to waste, you know, that's a lot of money that you could be putting into quilting fabric.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to do that. So you also, we'll take this a little like side veer here, but you also have developed a set of rulers to help you cut the blocks, right?
Yeah, I designed, I have a quilting business, Jersey Girl Quilts, that I make all these quilts for people. And I just got so frustrated with the lack of the right sizes of templates that I wanted to use for my quilts. And just trying to see the designs through all the lines of your normal quilting ruler. And so I designed these templates that only have two lines across the center, horizontal and vertical. They have a hole in the center so that you can mark the center. And then they just have a line around the edge that shows you about where the design should fall to make sure it's in your block, and a stitching line. But you can see otherwise totally through it. So you can design from any kind of T-shirt design that you want because you can see it. It just was so frustrating having to constantly lift up the rulers to be able to see, you know, okay, where exactly is the line falling and all this. And so it's just made it so much easier and nicer to design the quilts and the, you know, the blocks, and much easier. So my productivity has gone up, you know, a great deal because I'm not wasting a lot of time trying to figure out the designs. It's very obvious, you know,
the right
how
tool.
To cut it.
The right tool is always going to save you time.
Oh, absolutely. And I think quilters especially, we have so many tools, and we use them all. Because like you said, it does save a lot of time. And, you know, some people, you know, I usually will have them try one of the, it's called, they're all squared up tees templates. Mm-hmm. And I have them use their regular, like, 12-inch or 13-inch ruler, and then they look at the template, and they usually never go back.
Right.
Because it's just so much easier.
It is so, yeah. And I've known people in the past who, like, for applique, who've gone and made a template for something they were going to, you know, do over and over it, like at Home Depot or something, because you know, it was just, they needed that. So let's talk. I think we're going to be able to get Meg for the last segment. So I want to get in a few more details with you. We think we got her. Tell me a little bit about how that your book has design, so people don't have to think about how to put all these memories into some layout. You give them a whole bunch of layouts, which is fantastic. You know, how do you think about a layout for the type of memory quilt you're doing? You know, what can you recommend for people about how to think about that?
What I usually have them do, and it's in the book, there's a whole chapter on how to make the blocks and the layouts, but the big thing is to, once you get all your blocks made, to lay them out, because it doesn't matter about the size and stuff of the block itself, it's the coloring and how large the design is and all those things of balance and color. So I really, you know, tell them to lay all the blocks out and just move things around until you get it to where you think it looks aesthetically pleasing and everything. Because you may, laying it out, you think, oh, this will go match or whatever. But then once you put it on the floor and put it all together, you know, you might find that something just doesn't look quite balanced or whatever. So before I ever sew anything together, I make sure all my blocks are laid out, or I put them up on my design board, and you just make sure that the way they look or it's aesthetically pleasing to how, you know, how you want it to be.
Now, do you have layouts in there for different size blocks? You know, because sometimes you might only have like maybe an emblem off of a T-shirt, like a little logo thing on the top left. Another one's a whole back.
Yeah, I show how you can put a lot of blocks, different kinds of logos and different designs together to make one block, mm-hmm. and also different sizes. And the templates come in sizes 4.5 all the way up to 16.5 inches, which is something that most other rulers, you can't find that. So they're mm-hmm. great for all different kinds of things. But yeah, in the book, the whole point is to use different sizes, different techniques to make your to make your blocks and make your quilts. So it's a really good resource of, you know, how to frame things to make them work and how just to blend all kinds, different kinds of blocks together to make your quilt look nice and be able to use all kinds of different sizes and things in your quilts.
And then how do you pick, we have about two minutes, how do you pick the color that'll tie everything together? Because like your space one is fantastic with the royal blue and the sort of tan gold colors. How do you pick that color?
I usually will start out just making the blocks, and then most of my quilts have sashing of either black or white, because that usually, mostly it is black, because that usually blends and frames the quilts, the shirts very nicely. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it's mainly what looks the best with all of the shirts. Does the client, or do I want to use a theme? So like in the space quilt or the train quilt, I love doing theme quilts. If they want a Greek quilt, okay, so what colors do you want in that? So it just depends on what the person wants, you know, in there. If it's a sports quilt, you know, do you want sports fabric, school fabric, those kinds of things. Yeah. And then I go from there. One of the things I always do is I never use a fabric that does not have some kind of movement in it. I don't use plain cottons. I love to make sure that all my fabric has some kind of movement to it, even my sashing fabric. So,
So it's not, you know, so it can, like a tone on tone that maybe varies, you know, so it doesn't read solid.
Correct. Yeah, my blacks are tone on tone, or the whites would be white on white, mm-hmm. but just something that has a little bit of movement in it. Nothing big and bold that will take away from the shirts, but just something that has a little bit of movement. And then other than that, it's just what, you know, what is the thing that the person wants, you know, colors and those kinds of things. I just go by what the quilt, usually once you put it together, it'll speak to you as to what would work the best, and then you talk to the person that you're making it for. I don't just put the quilts together myself. They have total input as to what kind of fabric I use for the quilts, because it's mm-hmm. their memories.
Right.
So I make sure that they pick what they want.
Right. It's their memories. Yes, that's good. Trish, this has been so exciting, and I love all the detail. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
Now, you can find Trish at happymemoriesquilts.com or jerseygirlquilts.com, either place. And then real quickly, are you out traveling as well? They can meet you at a show?
Yes, I'm going to be teaching at the AQS Lancaster show this year. So I'll be doing a trunk show lecture, and I'm also doing a basic T-shirt block. A quilt class.
Super.
So to learn the basics of doing the quilt blocks.
Well, Trish, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. I'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts and More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast, and I am so excited to have Meg Hockey from Crabapple Hill Studio. Meg, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for including me.
I am so excited to talk to you. You know, I think all of us own one of your designs. You know, seriously. I'm not even joking about that.
I talked to somebody once at a quilt show or something long ago, and she came up and said, you know, I have all of your patterns, and I even started one of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right, right. There was no rule we have to start them. We can just own them for the pleasure of looking at them. Because now, for those of you who have not seen a Crabapple Hill Studio pattern yet, it's a delightfully wonderful embroideries and patchwork, and the colors are very soft. Have you always worked in this style, Meg?
I jump around. I'm a very fickle person. I like a lot of different things, and I tend to move around between them. So not everything is real soft and, you know, shabby, chicy, girly. I'm heavily into Halloween, so I have a lot of, you know, more happy, whimsical type things. Yeah, and I like the black work, and I like everything.
Yeah,
it's just...
Now you have to tell me just real briefly, because I want to talk about some other stuff, but tell me how you got into designing, because, you know, you were working in a quilt shop at one point doing things, and designing sort of found you, didn't it?
It did. It kind of stepped up and got me.
Yeah.
I had always made things, and I'd always done artwork, and the quilt shop that I worked for, I noticed that they had a newsletter that wasn't as cute as it could be. So I volunteered, you know, hey, I know how to draw.
Yeah.
And I started doing that. And they realized I could draw, and I started eventually doing illustrations for them. And that worked its way into doing some pattern artwork and doing patterns, but not in my own name. And it kind of evolved. I don't know if you want to know how it really happened, because it's not a happy little thing. I had a coworker that took some credit for my artwork one day right in front of me, and I was upset, but I never said anything to her. Instead, I complained to my husband about it. It seems a little too much, because one day he drove me down to where we get business licenses here,
right.
And he said, you're going to get your business license, and I don't ever want to hear about that again. So that's how I started.
I know. I think it's the funniest story, because even though it was kind of like, well, but, you know, it kicked you in the butt, didn't it? And sort
it
of.
It did. It's something I never, never would have done. I just am not a real get out there, you know, proclaim myself to the world type of person, and it was what I needed. I needed to get mad.
Yeah. Well, we're all glad you did. So now all of us can see your beautiful things. Tell me how you go about designing something. You know, what is your process for coming up with a new design?
Oh, man. It can, you probably hear this all the time. It can come from anywhere. It can be, you know, you'll see something that you'll just fall in love with the colors of something, and that sparks something in your imagination, and you know, can draw something from that. Or holidays are always just really easy, because I've always been a little crazy about holidays. It can be anything. It can just be flowers out in the garden, or driving down the road and seeing a pretty barn or anything.
And then when you see that, Meg, do you like, you know, what is your style? Do you grab a notebook or are you
Yes,
so you're sketching on the back of an envelope?
Everything, yeah. There have been a lot of really messy napkins at tables and things too. I have notebooks stashed everywhere because it's just like the other night. I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought of I was dreaming about a fabric that I just loved, and I had to very quickly go in where I wasn't disturbing my husband and write it down in the dark on a piece of paper. We'll see if it ever comes about, but it was really pretty in my dream.
Right, yeah, yeah, they that looked good then. Yeah, that's really cool. do you then go through like sort of a sample of what your design will be, or do you sketch it and then that's pretty much it? Are you happy?
A lot of things get abandoned because I'll either draw them up and they don't look like I thought they were going to, and they'll just get put in a file, or even I'll get to the sample stage and get halfway through and say, that's not turning out as cute as I thought it would. But yeah, it's the drawing first. Of course, you have to so that you can trace it with what I do. It's so you can trace it. But the drawing first, and then it gets stitched, and everything gets kept track of while you're working so that you can remember what you used on different things, and then it gets written up.
And do you work in the computer then a lot yourself, or do you have somebody who does that for you, or is that your
thing? I do. I write the patterns. I've just recently, in the past several years here, I've had a really nice young man working for me who actually knows how to use Illustrator and Photoshop, and he makes diagrams and things for me and cleans things up. I don't have to completely start from scratch when I have a mistake in one of my drawings. I can just have him fix it on the computer, which is just heavenly for me.
Yeah, that's nice. It's always nice to have some, you know, like a partner to do part of it, you know, to get it going. So your studio space, as it is right now, is I can look at it on Facebook and just like, you know, I can just go and look at your page and look at, you know, like what is going on in there, because I want to come to it. It is so gorgeous. You've hosted like retreats, right?
We do retreats. Yeah, and we have a new space that we're just getting ready to move into. It's in the shape of a barn. It's like a barn, but it's going to enable us to have more retreats and have larger numbers of people in the retreats. Ooh. So that'll be nice. It has an on-site kitchen, and we'll have a little shop area, which will make it nice, because as we are right now, we work here in the building we're in now, and you can imagine what it's like. It's like having somebody come to your house and you have laundry all over the couch that you're folding. Yeah, that's the way it is here. We have to clean up and decorate to have retreats, and then once again we have to break down so we can get back to work, and it's going to be so much nicer when we can leave things kind of nice all the time.
And will it be open all the time?
I
mean, like regularly or just on certain times?
I'm just really torn. Once again, I worked in a quilt shop, and I know how much work it is to maintain a quilt shop. And so I'm thinking if we are open to the public, so to speak, not during retreat time, it would probably be just 2 days a week. I'm thinking maybe a Friday and Saturday. And I think we're going to have to really look at that and work our way into it, because it'll involve hiring some more people and all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's a whole new business that you would
It is a whole new business.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how hard it is to run a quilt shop.
Right. Everybody should work in one for a month.
You know,
just to get it out of their system.
If nothing
then
else,
they'll be like,
to cut kits.
Right. They'll be kissing everybody in there afterwards. Thank you for owning
the job. Yes, they will.
Yeah. So out of your designs, is there one that, like, you know most people have made or bought the pattern? Do you have, like, a top one?
Yes. I have I have a quilt called Winter Wonderland that is snowmen, mm-hmm. and it's several years old now. And I actually, we within the last 5 years, we built our house, and we refer to our house as the house the snowmen built. Because I swear, I think everybody bought that pattern and then forgot they bought it and bought it again, the way I buy cookbooks. And, yeah, that's probably, over the years, it just kind of chugs along in the background now, but it still, it just amazes me how many of those things have gone out of here.
That's the one that all my friends made, or some are still making. Yes, they've made it, the center has the snowmen, like you're describing. And then there's these gorgeous asymmetrical piece blocks that are just beautiful. Yes. And so I've seen them in black and white. Yours is red and white, green and white, purple and white.
The favorite one I ever saw was done. You have to picture this. It was beautiful. It was hot pink, bright pink.
Wow.
Everything about it, just pink and white.
Wow. Yeah.
It was neat.
Yeah, neat. That is so fun, isn't it, to see people take it?
I would much rather see things that people have put their own little spin on than just something that is absolutely exactly the way that I designed it. And sometimes I get jealous because sometimes their way of doing it looks so much better than the way I did it.
I know. And I want to go and don't you want to go remake it? They're like, I really like that colorway. Yes. I should remake the quilt.
If I had time, I would.
Yeah, I know. So what is your, tell me, we have just another minute. Tell me what the current project is that you're working on.
That I'm working on?
Yeah.
I'm working on about four things right now. one of them is a quilt that is, I think it's going to be called Snow Parade, and it's a snowman in a parade with a marching band of snowmen, that kind of thing. And then I'm working on a group of spring things and also a Christmas fabric line.
You know how that is. Yeah. Well, Meg, you know, your pieces are just wonderful. I'm just love them to death. Thank you.
Thank you for designing them.
So people should visit you at crabapplehillstudio.com. So that's your website where they can find wherever you are hanging out, right?
Yes. And all of our other information is on there about Pinterest and Instagram and, you know, things like that.
Yeah, and they can find out where to buy the patterns if they can get them from you. And
I wish we had a listing of shops that carry the patterns, but unless they deal with us directly, we have no way of knowing who they are. Yeah, I would love to put them on the website.
Well, I am sure people will figure it all out. They'll just ask them to get it from you. So thank you so much, Meg.
Thank you.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. You can visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. Sign up for the newsletter. You can visit me at patsloan.com, and you can sign up for my newsletter. And I hope when I'm out traveling that I will get a chance to meet you in person. You can ask me about the radio show here. It's a lot of fun to do, this podcast. And remember, you can go back and listen to all the episodes. We have tons and tons of episodes available. You can get iTunes, and we will see you next time.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.